Welcome to the MEP podcast, where I'll be exploring the intersection of sport and spirituality through a variety of practices that ultimately invite us to learn, grow, and connect. I believe that through movement and mindfulness, we can create an awareness within that will allow us to integrate as individuals and connect more deeply to our mind, body, and spirit, together navigating a way to the way. Welcome back to this new episode of the MEP podcast. This is the second episode in my focus series where I dive into topics more specific and try to be a little bit more succinct and have it a little bit shorter. This is actually the second time I'm recording this because there seemed to be some corruption with the file and it was skipping after about 21 minutes when I uploaded it before. So I'm going to be going back in, which is not my favorite thing to do because a lot of this does flow kind of through me as I go through the conversation or conversation with myself, by myself in this case. And it felt really good actually last time. It ended up around 50 minutes. So it felt like it was very jam-packed with a lot of my perspective and thoughts around this topic. That said, I'm going to dive back in from the top. Maybe I will have new things to add. I'm not exactly sure. But most of all, I'm going to make sure I save the file properly so that everyone can listen to it. And so this episode is going to be all about MDMA therapy and the experience, some of the framework for getting the most out of it, leading up to it, coming out of it. It's also a little bit of a sort of response or accent to Andrew Huberman or Huberman Labs podcast a week or two ago about MDMA because I listened to it and I found it hard to get through because it felt like the amount of useful information in it would have taken 20 minutes to explain or share. And it was just completely science, data-based, research-based. And I think when it comes to psychedelics, and I'm going to include MDMA as a psychedelic in terms of therapeutic use and the sort of experience, not so much maybe the technical side of things, but psychedelic, the word comes from this sort of mind manifesting. And I would say that the mind definitely manifests and experiences different dimensions and realms on this with this substance, with this medicine. And so for sake of ease, maybe we'll just say MDMA is a psychedelic in terms of psychedelic therapy. And so, yeah, his podcast, I found a really hard time because it was just like missing so much. And that's really the problem I have with a lot of science is to make it useful, you have to isolate variables. You have to isolate specific things. And specifically when it comes to psychedelic work, I think it's impossible. You're combining, you know, dimensions beyond what we can consciously conceive in normal sort of walking around awareness with depths of the nervous system and our biology and our genes and our mind and our unconscious. And there's just so many factors and layers and nuance and depth to these experiences that to isolate what serotonin receptor is activating and try to parse out any sort of like actually meaningful information from that when it comes to these experiences is almost impossible. So, you know, really basically the takeaways were that it's probably not actually very toxic for humans to do and use MDMA, especially in a therapeutic sort of intention when you're only really doing it a handful of times in your entire life. You're not going to really have any sort of toxic, neurotoxic issues with that, which is good, and I didn't know that. The other things to know are that, you know, there's a huge amount of oxytocin, serotonin, and dopamine all releasing in a unique combination. And beyond that, there's no point in listening to his podcast about it, I would have to say. So some initial caveats is I've never used MDMA socially. I've never really used many drugs socially outside of alcohol and marijuana, and neither of those I use anymore, almost ever, maybe once a year, something like that. But I've never had, you know, taken cocaine or MDMA at a party or anything like that. And that's not to say that those are bad things to do, but just in the context of my experience with this substance, and when it comes to this sort of intentional therapeutic use, I'm going to refer to it as medicine, because it really is used in that way with my experience. But using it as a social drug and connecting thing, and using it in group therapeutic sessions too, I think can be massively beneficial and I'm sure enjoyable. So I'm not judging those, but I just wanted to define that so you kind of have an understanding of where I'm coming from, how I've had experience personally, and what that has been like. So the other thing is, I'm definitely not saying go out and buy yourself some MDMA and give yourself a therapy session, something like that. But I do want to emphasize and stress that if you do go acquire MDMA on your own, that it's really important that you test it, because it is just mind-boggling how dangerous it is to buy any of these sorts of substances if they're not sort of purely plant-based and stay in the plant form to some degree. Something like this is it's completely synthetic, and so it's really important. So I had learned from Tim Ferriss's podcast that there is a website called Dance Safe, and you can buy testing kits from them to make sure that these substances are totally safe. But again, the best way to work with this sort of medicine is with a therapist in a safe setting that is legal if possible. But I also recognize that that isn't available to everyone. So moving on, now we're really going to get into sort of the bulk of it, and I'm going to try and move quickly and be succinct as much as possible. But what I really wanted to share is, and this goes for really any sort of psychedelic work, but again, specifically with regards to MDMA, I feel like this is very relevant. And so what we need to address is that we have some sort of foundation within ourselves for any sort of medicine work. And what do I mean by that? I think at our core, the nervous system is really going to be essential to developing this to some level of strength. And that is having capacity to feel, to recognize feelings, to not be overwhelmed and swept away by different feelings and emotions. That is ultimately what's grounding the mind. The mind and brain are an end organ, and the nervous system is the most core kind of part of ourselves physiologically. So when our mind is fighting against a bad trip, for instance, it's because the nervous system doesn't have the capacity to feel safe and handle what's going on generally. So doing some sort of nervous system work, and for me, finding Irene Lyon and her work has been absolutely essential to my more recent work with these kind of medicine substances, and even deeper breath work and things like that as well. And honestly, just normal therapy sessions that I have too. Without that foundation, we can have a beautiful big experience, but we can also close up after it or feel shock or just feel so unsafe that we can actually sort of contract back within ourselves even more constrained than we were before. And so this really slow conscious nervous system work, creating a sense of safety and capacity in oneself, is really important. The other thing is creating a safe environment with a therapist, a coach, or a mentor or a guide, and the space you're set and setting for this sort of work. And so in terms of MAPS and how they approach it, every client that's going to do an MDMA session would typically have at least a 2 to 4 therapy sessions with the person that they're going to go into the journey with. And that is building, trust. It's building a sense of safety, a connection there. And that's really important, I think, in terms of this sort of work. And so then the space, is it in their office? Is it in your house? Is it in their studio space? Is it in a clinical setting? You just really want to be able to feel safe in whatever space that is. And you need to be able to listen to your nervous system and not override it, not overpower it. If you're not feeling safe, if you're feeling overwhelmed, then you need to check in with your therapist or coach in this case, and because there's going to be some level of resistance and nervousness going into this sort of unknown of one's unconscious and embodied self. That's normal, but is there a deeper sort of lack of safety in terms of the person you're with or the space that you're in? And listening to that is really important because you don't want to override that. You don't want to overpower that. The second piece that I think is just so important, and I've learned this much more in the last year, and continue to be having real experiences that where I feel like this is a wisdom that I have now, because knowledge is great, knowing things conceptually is great, but the actual embodied experience of these things is what provides true wisdom. And this is something that Irene Lyon again really emphasizes in her work and teaching, and that is education. So it is so important to have some education around the psyche, the unconscious, your ego, some of your shadow, some of your trauma. You don't need to know everything and have a solution to everything by any means, but you do need to understand what's going on. Because if you go into these depths, and it could be in a dream, it could be in breath work, it could be in a therapy session. If you're going to these places and your mind, your sort of ego mind, this sort of self-protective survival first mechanism is just thrown in the deep end and they have no kind of context or structure to grasp onto, there will likely be some sort of freak out, feeling really unsafe, huge reaction, and this can be detrimental to, any sort of sustainable progress in this work. So, doing Irene Lyon's work, education is super heavy loaded up front about the nervous system, about polyvagal theory, about, the body and listening and understanding all these things. And I think this is really the case too. The more I sort of have learned, and that could be sort of Jungian archetypes, processing things in my own therapy, understanding IFS, and I'll touch on this later. All of these things contribute to a much more robust structure that we can sort of use to move up and down and in and out of our unconscious into the unknown and not be overwhelmed and not be blown out by it because we have some idea of what's going on and we can listen more. It's just like in normal life, if you're in your office and you're feeling stressed and unsafe, it's really hard to be creative. It's really hard to listen to people compassionately and empathetically. So it's the same thing when we go within ourselves. If we feel safe, if we understand the sort of construct that we're entering into, and the mind can sort of back off of that vigilant survival stress, then we can listen more deeply to the nuance of our body, of our nervous system, of our heart, and we can be more creative in terms of how we understand, unpack, and ultimately heal and process what we are unable to see in our sort of normal waking consciousness. And so education is, yeah, super crucial, and I think it's really important. That said, there's also a total, and this I think is probably the case with a lot of Huberman Lab listeners. And again, not a judgment, but I think this is the case with a lot of people, but specifically because his platform is so data science, information driven, it's very easy to stay in our minds, stay in our thoughts, understand these concepts deeply, think about them, figure them out. But the reality is, if we don't connect that to the unconscious and our embodied experience in our nervous system, we're never going to make the sort of progress. We're never going to feel the things we think we should be feeling, and so on. It's all these unconscious beliefs that are really driving the ship a lot of the time. And so, some of my biggest resources for setting this foundation and getting education around it is, I mentioned Irene Lyon. She has a 21-day nervous system reset or restart or something into those words. It's called 21 days, but I would preface it's more like 21 lessons, because you are encouraged and very much allowed to do this 21 days, in quotes, over 3 months, 4 months. Do it as slow as you need to, but it's a great starting place. You get a lot of good education, some really foundational practices, and to me, it's made a huge difference in my life. I know in the last few months, but also going forward, it's going to be a huge part of my foundation for health, well-being, and ultimately performance and creativity and all that stuff. So, She also has a longer 12-week program that I was in and did most of, and it was also hugely educational and great practices. And she has a ton of stuff on YouTube, so check that out. The next one I want to share is a book called Heart Minded by Sarah Blondin. She also has a lot of free meditations on Insight Timer, and I think she is just so amazing, especially when it comes to working with reconnecting to and understanding our heart and a lot of these deeper emotions. She just has such a beautiful way of giving permission and supporting just through her own voice, her own practice, her own wisdom, which in her meditations and the book are truly a gift. And I've gone through this book 3 times now, and I know I'm gonna continue to come back to it, as ultimately it's a reminder of what we are and how important our heart is, and that we really do have to be consciously nurturing that connection as well. So really great stuff from her. The next one is IFS, which is Internal Family Systems, by Richard Schwartz, and he has a book called No Bad Parts, which really is the best way to dive into and understand it. He's also on a lot of podcasts and talks about this process and even does certain processes with people on their podcasts, which is super interesting and cool. So you can actually see this IFS system in work. It's something I've been using now for the last probably 2 or 3 years, and I continue to come back and use, and it's massively helpful, a beneficial system and understanding to how to work with these sort of parts of ourselves. There's these protectors, and there's parts of us that are kind of abandoned and isolated, and it's actually quite simple, but it's also complex, and it's really good stuff. Richard Schwartz has also talked about working with this system in connection with substances like MDMA and the huge benefits he's seen from that. Another 2 people that I think are really good are Gabor Maté, Peter Levine, and Bessel van der Kolk. Gabor's new book, The Myth of Normal, and his other book, When the Body Says No. Peter Levine has a few books, and he's also founder of Somatic Experiencing, which is one of the key pieces of Irene Lyons' work. She's a student of his. And then Bessel van der Kolk's The Body Keeps the Score, and he's also shared a lot about psychedelic and MDMA work in this space as well. So, one thing you may find is a common theme with all of those people, except for Sarah specifically, is they're highly trauma-informed in a much deeper, more comprehensive, and holistic way than almost anybody else I've come across in this space. And ultimately, what we're working with here is trauma. People want to call things depression or addiction or PTSD specifically, or complex PTSD. But the reality is, trauma is at the root of all this, and it starts with pretty much all of us at a very young age. Thinking of something like sleep training, which is extremely common, that is traumatic to a child, to a baby, to an infant. It just simply is, and that's often, one of the first deep wounds that we experience as little innocent beings, freshly on this earth, which is super sad. And that's not to say, we can't recover from this either, but it is a very common first trauma, and ultimately, trauma is what's going on. So, why did Huberman's lab make me want to talk about this too? The other thing is, like, he had didn't once talk about the nervous system. He talks about how MDMA works with PTSD, but not as good with addiction or depression. And again, it's like these are all just manifestations of the same issues. So the way that they're categorized and the way that success is categorized on the outcomes of these is just, it's so lacking in the nuance and comprehension of how this stuff is unfolding. And so that's one of the issues I have with this. And I totally get where he's coming from, and the solo episode is just very, factual. I know he has personal experience of this, and ironically, it's him sharing on Tim Ferriss. There's about a 10-minute clip you can watch on YouTube or something, is one of the things that really piqued my interest in working with MDMA. So this is definitely not because I don't like him, because I do really like him. This is because I think when it comes to just purely science-based perspectives on work with something like MDMA, it just gets 5% of it at most and cannot even track or create data points or understand the nuance and depth and the different layers to why and how this type of experience is amazing, how it works, and what is happening. There's just a level of that science will, I don't think, ever be able to explain because we don't know very much about the consciousness when it comes to science. We do from experience and people with wisdom of unpacking it do, but there's just not data points around it. So when it comes to that sort of work when, with a substance like MDMA, I think it's a little bit futile, from my perspective. So let's get into MDMA therapy setup a little bit. Like I mentioned, ideally you're going to have 2 to 3 sessions before any sort of medicine journey. And I highly recommend having a therapist for a longer period of time before this. And I highly recommend making sure you have consistent sessions after any session as well. It's going to just set you up. It's going to help you feel a lot more safe. It's going to help you be able to process, open, be seen as well. You want somebody you can trust and hopefully somebody you can really dive into this stuff with. But yeah, it's really important stuff. So make sure you're working with a coach, a therapist, somebody who can really guide you into this sort of space that either has experience with the depths of their own unconscious or potentially this sort of medicine work themselves. And then setting up the session itself, you basically want to take at least half a day without too much other crazy stuff going on. But you want to do this during the day. And I definitely recommend using an eye mask and music. And this changes the experience very much from how I understand it in terms of socially at night, where there's lots of stories of pretty rough come downs and whatnot as well. You really alleviate a ton of that by doing this during the day. I recommend starting between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. sort of thing, so you have plenty of time to sort of land back in the evenings and get to bed and try and get some sleep to sort of recover a little bit. And so the eye mask, you know, a lot of what people talk about with something like MDMA is this like deeply open-hearted, compassionate, empathetic experience. And when we're doing that socially, it's in connection with the music, it's in connection with our friends and the people we're with, our partner. But when we do this with the eye mask, all of that gets sort of focused inwards. And so that's where a lot of the deep benefits of this and this sort of compassionate experience of being with ourselves and being with our old traumas and being with our experiences and other people in our lives from within is what's really, really powerful. Music is also a vital tool, I think, and you know, it's no surprise if you know anything about sort of shamanic practices over the centuries, really. Music is, you know, the most important shaman tool there is. I imagine if you spoke to most like really, you know, experienced shamans, if they only had 2 tools to work with, it would generally be tobacco and music. Could be a drum, a rattle, anything like that. But putting together a playlist either with your therapist or coach or by yourself is really important. And you want stuff that's going to, you know, have some variety, and you're going to also want stuff that doesn't have too much words. I found, you know, I've had experience with sort of ayahuasca and that there's no way I would be able to sort of DJ my playlist during one of those ceremonies, and that's very much where the shaman comes in and plays his role. But with something like MDMA, you know, if something is hard coming up and it needs some bit more energy, like you can change the song or you can put on something softer, piano, violin, whatever you're sort of resonating with. So having a big playlist that you can easily maneuver around, I found for me really helped the process along in a really positive and beautiful way. So once you take this, and Huberman actually does outline this a lot in his, but essentially you're taking around 120 milligrams for a full-grown adult, more or less. The way that MAPS does it, I think, is you do that for the first 2 sessions, and then if you do a third session, you can do a booster, which is where you take the 120 milligrams, and then you would take a booster of 50 or 60 milligrams about an hour and a half into it, which. So again, I probably could have mentioned this at the beginning, but I've done 2 sessions now. So now I'm looking at an upcoming third session where I'm looking at doing the booster. I've also heard and read a lot of people that will use psilocybin in collaboration with MDMA. This sounds very interesting and I think makes sense to me, but I don't think I'm interested in doing that at this moment. Again, I would discuss this with my therapist and work with her to help navigate some choices like that. And ultimately, however, I have enough experience in these spaces where I feel like I can trust and listen to myself to know what's going to be right, when it's going to be right, etc., things like that. So, but if you're starting off, make sure you're really consulting people and learning enough so you have some idea of what's going on. So, why MDMA versus something like psilocybin or an ayahuasca? So, for me, I've worked with ayahuasca the most, also DMT and a little bit of psilocybin. And I found they are absolutely magical substances and medicines and very different, each in their own way. But the potential for them is so far and great and wide that it's you don't know where it's going to go. And when you go somewhere dark, you can be really in that place feeling it. And by the end, it's always incredibly beautiful, deep, deep learning, so much insight. And amazing, but it can be a little bit rougher of a ride. And so, depending on where your nervous system and that foundation and education and experience is at, it can be dangerous, isn't the right word, but it can be harder to make it through, navigate, and ultimately integrate afterwards. So, MDMA has a little bit more of a narrow range of experience, I would say. It's a little bit more focused, and you know, those. The serotonin, dopamine, and oxytocin create this really unique combination, and it's very much this empathic experience. Compassion and empathy would be the core elements I would have to share, would be part of this medicine specifically, which is really interesting and unique. So, my first session, I did about 2 months ago, and yeah, I was coming out of this really intense like burnout and a lot of nervous system rebuilding and a lot of like subtle work like that, starting to do breath work. And ultimately, you know, some of the biggest takeaways were that I didn't feel safe in my body and my nervous system for a very, very, very long time. And the burnout was sort of caused by an overload of that, you know, and you can think of it as like an overload of trauma in my system where it just sort of collapsed. In terms of sports, it felt like a crazy buildup of lactic acid in my muscles that could not be flushed. And so I felt bloated and heavy and lethargic and slow. And it was like I didn't have the capacity to process and flush out trauma. So even something small was just adding to the pile where I normally would have had the capacity to move through something like that without it affecting me so deeply. So it was a long, you know, probably 5, 6 months of really consistent deep work to get to the place where I could do this MDMA session. And as it sort of hit and I could really feel it, there was just this deep overflow and overwhelming in a beautiful way sense of safety in my body. And I was just like, oh my God, this is what it feels like to be safe. It felt like something I had wanted for so long. And I really have learned to trust my body, I would say, in a way through this process and through Irene Lyon's work especially. And so I would want to sing or yell or chant or shake, and I just really allowed all of that to flow through me. And it was incredibly somatic. There was so much physical release of my body, no material coming out of my body, just all through sound and vibration and chanting and some singing and moving around on the bed and shaking and all this stuff. And it takes about 5 to 6 hours, the whole thing, and it goes up and down, ebbs and flows. And you know, it was this kind of oscillation between this very physical somatic releasing experience, which you know, you're not always necessarily being like, oh, I just released this trauma from my stomach or my knee or my shoulder or my back. You're just allowing the body and its wisdom to lead the way, and whatever is moving, and whatever's releasing and is releasing. And then there will also be times where I found it was very like thinking about a specific thing or a person or an event, and being with that with a completely elevated level of clarity. And along with that elevated level of clarity and awareness, a really powerful amount of compassion and empathy, both for myself and whoever else was involved. So I was really surprised by this, to be honest. I didn't expect it. I didn't know what it was going to be like. And it was even going into some of the hardest things I could imagine, there was a level of peace, love, compassion, and empathy that was not overwhelming, not dark, not too much. And it just allowed you to really face it face to face, be with it, have compassion for yourself, for my little self. And I guess, a caveat as I explain and describe these experiences is this is my experience. Everyone is going to be, have a different experience, but I want to share some insights because, again, I think that's where, the Huberman Lab, if you just listen to that, you would have no idea of what might be possible. And for me, this is what happened and is, one of the many flavors I'm sure you can and may experience depending on how and who you are and all the things leading up to it. So that first one was massively, massively healing, more so than I could have imagined. Honestly, it was better and more profound than I expected and would have even asked for. That said, I knew it wasn't done. I knew there was more work to do, and there's really been a process of accepting that I am in a process, and there's not one ceremony or session that's going to heal everything. And the more I do that, the more I soften, and the more I can release as well. So it's a really interesting, just dynamic there. So one of the things that was, two of the things that were shocking. One is I've had chronic pain in my knee since having ACL surgery 4+ years ago. That almost completely was gone after this first session. That was very surprising. Never even thought about that. And just also very cool to have that experience and have that happen. Really interesting. The other thing is through that whole burnout phase I kind of mentioned, my sleep quality had been very bad and worse than I'd ever imagined. I could feel myself aging in a way that was really not pleasant. And after that first session, within about 3 nights, I was feeling, quite good, and my sleep just totally bounced back. And my, I used the Oura Ring so I could track the data around it on top of how I was actually feeling, and my sleep improved like 50% better, and it was really amazing because sleep is just obviously so important to our physical, mental, spiritual well-being. So to have good sleep quality back that has totally stuck around since then has been a total gift that, again, I didn't expect, but makes perfect sense because the nervous system released this overload and a lot of this burden it had been carrying, a lot of emotions around sadness and anger and other things as well. And so, yeah, with that released, it has the capacity to feel more safe and to relax more, and so the sleep is better, which is very cool. My second session, which was about 3 or 4 weeks ago now. So generally, I think when I was reading about MAPS protocol, which you can find a lot of information on their site, they space these sessions between 3 to 5 weeks apart, and like I said, 2 or 3 sessions, and that would be like a typical clinical trial sort of profile with the therapeutic sessions before and throughout. So that's kind of the framework. So I did my second one, I think 3.5 weeks later, and I plan on doing the next one about 4 weeks after my second one. So that's where I'm at personally. The second one, I went in, from quite a different place, physically, nervous system, consciousness-wise, not only because of that first session, but I also got married in between these two sessions, which was really interesting. And, that's a pretty powerful, profound ceremony to go through as well. And so that opened up a lot of stuff, new insights, a lot to work with, and brought that into this next one. And really, the second one, the sort of theme was that everything was allowed, and really stepping into a deeper level of trust, of my body, of like essentially working with this inner child, this inner infant part of myself, that I had spent the last month really nurturing this relationship. So I knew that this was likely to go deeper into that. And it was really, really, it was a little bit more challenging because that part of myself has really suppressed a lot of emotional experience and emotional repression, and not allowed to feel the feelings, not allowed to express what those feelings are, especially anger, but also disgust, shame, things like that. And so it was challenging to get to that sort of edge and then have to remember, like, yes, this is allowed too. Everything is allowed. Talking to my little self, like, I love you no matter what. Like, really being explicit about how accepted holistically he is, and therefore I am. And that really unearthed and opened up quite a huge release emotionally, of this pretty drastic range of sadness, disgust, shame, and anger. All of them to extents I had probably never experienced. And again, the MDMA unlocks this mind, body, somatic, nervous system connection and ability to move fluidly between them that I have experienced with other psychedelics, but it's so specific to those relationships in my sessions that it was really focused and beautiful, and it felt just so deeply connected. I could almost feel my, like, heart and gut and spirit connecting and creating more space for who I truly am to come through, rather than be so clogged up with all this old trauma that has been building up for, 37, 38 years, basically. And so, yeah, truly, it was challenging to go into those emotions that I felt I had never been able to go into unconsciously, and to consciously be with them, allow them, trust my body. And the body piece was huge in the second one, because I've been very hard on it. I'm pretty disciplined in terms of my lifestyle, and yet my body hasn't sort of acted or reacted or recovered or performed in the way I've wanted it to, not looked how I want it to, be at the weight I want it to. And my sort of internal self-judgment can be very harsh, and a lot of that was directed at my body. And in this session, I really was blown away at the realization that my body saved my life. My body took on the burden of all of this emotional trauma that I was not able to feel or process and not able to express and release in those early years. But because those were the patterns that were set, that's how I lived most of my life as well. And so it was just like this deep, deep, deep amount of compassion for my body for sort of carrying the burden that my heart and mind couldn't handle and didn't know how to handle and was never taught how to handle. And so it was really, really, really beautiful and sad, and just this immense amount of gratitude and compassion towards to my body specifically, for this. And again, this trauma for me, it manifested in this really intense density internalized in my body, and certain blockages and energy flow and constipation and this sort of stuff. For other people, that shows up in anxiety, ADHD, some combination of those, addiction, depression, hyper type A sort of activity, addicted to work, addicted to exercise, addicted to racing or training or lifting. All of these things are imbalances in our expression because we're unable to process the trauma that's underneath them. And that might not be so easy to hear, that you almost definitely have some load of unprocessed trauma that is causing imbalance, dysregulation in your system. But that's what I've come to learn. And so, if I find out otherwise that that isn't the case, I will happily share that and admit it. But the deeper I go, the more I learn, the more I have these experiences myself, the more I work with clients, myself, the more I do this work just holistically. It's the depth and the nuance of these traumas, these imprints from our parents or core caregivers, are just so deep and so impactful. I'm blown away every time I go into these sort of spaces at how nuanced and deep they truly are. And the only way to process them is to go be with them. And ultimately, we have spent most of our lives trying not to do that, to not confront these things, because they were so hard to be with at the time. But the only way to truly heal them, and be with them, and to be, live in freedom and peace, ultimately, in like the most deep way I think a lot of people will say that they live in freedom or peace, but that's not the reality. They're just trying to convince themselves that that's the case. The only way to truly do that is to go into these kind of shadow places and be with what we couldn't be with in the past. And I find, and I'm finding MDMA may be one of the most effective medicines for doing this, which is why I'm inspired to share this as well. And so, my body was able to unburden a lot of this trauma in the session specifically, and also open me up to a new level of trust and understanding so that as I came out, I can continue that practice with breath work, with yoga, with working with my therapist, really listening to my body. The first 2 days I came out, I felt so good and like light. I felt energy, and I, went for a little jog, went for a little bike ride, and then I was like, hold on, that sort of ego mind is jumping back in the driver's seat. Let's just take a pause. Body, what do you actually need here? And it really wanted rest. Carrying that burden for so long is intensely energy sucking and draining from our systems. That's another thing is as we process and release this trauma, we have so much more access to vitality, so much more openness to receive and share love, to ultimately be who we truly are, which most of us are very cut off from. And Gabor talks a ton about this, being cut off from our authentic self. We just have to do that as we're young to maintain connection with our parents generally. And it's really sad, and it can be navigated in a much more thoughtful, intentional, conscious way growing up. The repair is very much an option that we have. But if we get to this point and we're adults, then we have to do that for ourselves. And MDMA is a massively beneficial and helpful tool in doing that, along with all these kind of other practices, that foundation, that education, and things like that. I guess another piece on the trauma is really like, it's not necessarily the event that happened, but it's how we internalize that event. And also, while that happens, we don't have an empathetic witness to actually see us in that experience and allow us to feel what we need to feel and express how we feel and feel safe in doing so. So that doesn't even need to be explicit. We can watch something happen in front of us. It could be one parent talking to another, or a sibling, or a coach, or a teacher, or all these things. It doesn't even need to be happening directly to us, but the way that we sort of internalize and understand the situation through a very limited young level of awareness can end up being internalized in a way that we're trying to make sense of this thing and keep ourselves safe from some kind of disconnection. And that can be, in this mix as well. But one example I'll try and share quickly is when I tore my ACL and everything else in my knee the last time, I was in a basketball gym by myself. And so nobody was there. I lived by myself. I didn't have a girlfriend or anything at the time. And I was in so much pain. I was in total shock as well, just totally shocked. I crawled back to the bench, packed up my bag, literally hopped on one leg back to my car, drove my car back to my house, which was only 5 minutes, but it was a stick shift, so I had to use my knee on the clutch. And so I put a shirt in my mouth so I could like scream and yell every time I had to shift gears. Made it home, crawled up the stairs, and basically just took some Tylenol and was in total denial and shock. No witness, no empathetic witness. And I've held this trauma and pain in my knee ever since. 4 or 5 years. Never really healed properly, which is, I understand this now. Whereas before it was like, oh, was it the rehab? Was it this? And it's like, oh no, I never was able to process the trauma there. So a couple of years ago, I went on a bike ride. I was overtired and I hit this super gnarly pothole. Really hurt my shoulder, wrist, arm, bailed, ripped everything, snapped my handlebars. First thing, there was two people that I see in the neighborhood all the time. They came over, helped me off the road, kind of dusted me off, made sure I was okay, asked if I need help. That helped me like get my bearings enough. I could walk home, which was only a mile. My partner at the time, now wife, was at home. She, welcomed me in, gave me a hug. I laid down on the bed and she was like just totally there seeing me, and I could release. I started shaking and crying, and it was like how scary that was, how painful it is. I don't know what's going to happen now. I don't know how injured I am. And like all of that could move through my body and release because I had this empathetic witness to this traumatic experience. And I, ended up healing from those wounds, and I don't carry any of that pain or issues from it. So there's just one example of what happens if we have this sort of witness that sees us and allows us to experience and feel what we're feeling to another experience where we don't. And these can be big or small experiences, and they start, from probably before we're born, but certainly our birth is a huge one as well. And so, yeah, there's a lot in there, and it can be a lifetime of these sort of experiences that create these traumatic blocks. In the second session that I had, I almost had this visual of like an axe like hacking a tree. Like every time all of these like traumatic experiences I had were like big hacks into my tree, and the tree being sort of like a representation of my nervous system and my vitality, and sort of I almost imagine our bodies as, a river and water. How is it flowing through us? Is it openly flowing through us like a healthy river, or is it stagnant and blocked, or is it flowing through us so intensely that we can't even handle it or manage it, and there's somewhere in the middle that we want to be at. But for me, it was like all these hacks to this tree were clogging up the river. And so unburdening, cleaning out this river, of myself, of my vitality and flow, that connection between mind, body, heart, spirit, gut, and all this, freeing that back up. So that was a huge part of the second one. And since then, the process has been even more profound, because I have more space. I have more space to be creative, to listen to myself in a deeper way, which is really interesting. And so it is unfolding. And in the past, I've had these coming out of big, like ayahuasca ceremonies, and then something will happen and I'll kind of close back up. And that was because at the time I had this lack of foundation in my nervous system. And so this time, having really done a lot of this nervous system work and having such a deeper understanding, it feels so sustainable. And that's not to say a week after one of these MDMA sessions, I don't feel quite as light and free and unburdened as I did a day after, or the next day maybe, because some of the stuff starts to settle back down. And also, as you release and move through these layers, the next layer presents itself. And the deeper we generally go into these layers, the harder they are to process and be with. And so sometimes we, have this huge release. We have all this awareness. We move through it. We feel unburdened. And then, in a some matter of time, we are sort of confronted with the next layer, the next challenge. And that may be even more challenging than the previous one. And so there may be some hard feelings where it's like, oh, why isn't this working? I don't feel as good. But it's like, well, actually, you do. You feel good enough to tackle this next challenge. And, being aware of that, I find is really beneficial because it could be so easy to be a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Oh, man, I felt so good after that. I got to do another one. Like, why am I feeling bad? And almost like blaming yourself or blaming the medicine for not lasting when the reality is orienting to, oh, what's this new thing? What's this next layer? And approaching it with a certain amount of like humility and curiosity, makes it a lot more fun, And also, you don't have to go to the spirit gym every single day. My coach and old mentor, Paul Check, told me that many times. You don't have to go to the spirit gym every day. So I'm not saying do breath work, meditate, and have therapy every single day. You got to live your life and enjoy it too. But, this like it is a non-linear journey, but I find with the sort of foundation, it's a much more linear progress. You're not taking as many steps back or sideways. And so that's why that's also so important. So it's I am very curious now after doing these two sessions and after the last kind of 3 weeks since the last session. Like I mentioned, I've had some deep openings in my psyche in sort of how I understand the great mother and the mother archetype and how that has been imprinted onto my partners throughout my life and my wife, and really starting to pull these things apart, which is a little bit intense because I find myself without this sort of like chronic suffering or these like old wounds or this kind of shadow material. Who am I? And who am I truly? And stepping into that and the courage that that takes, it might sound funny, but that's scary to that ego mind. And so continuing to work with that part of myself to, offer it assurance, offer it some education around what's happening so it understands and trusts this deep spiritual alchemical process, basically, because it is so nonverbal at this point, that the mind has a really hard time understanding it. So if it does have some constructs, if it does understand that this greater process is unfolding and it's for the best for all of us involved in terms of all of our parts, in terms of that IFS system, then it can trust that. And for me, trust is this other really, really profound key thing that is coming to the forefront. Trusting myself, trusting my body, trusting the great mother, and trusting her unconditional love. That could be Mother Earth, Mother Universe, however you imagine that, God, essentially. For me, it's become very tied to this sort of benevolent great mother. It's how it's personified anyways, but ultimately it's, the universal unconditional love, not the conditional love that human beings are capable of. And so there's been a really interesting separation there. So I'm about a week and a half away from potentially doing my next session. I am nervously excited because the way things continue to unfold, I know it will yield beautiful fruits. I'm confident that I've worked hard to create foundation, education, and have a support system and team and therapist that really supports and sees me through this, a partner that's supportive, and my little son who's also an inspiration for doing this work, because I know the more I do and clean this stuff out for myself, the less I will pass on to him. And that is constantly inspiring and also teaching him, teaching me as I see him and watch him discover the world is also really beautiful. So there's so many pieces in this that you can't study the data points to understand the complexity and nuance of something like this. And so I will potentially share what happens in the next one, but I wanted to wrap this up. I am really praying at the moment that this file works and that everything sounds good, and because there was a glitch about halfway through, so we will see. But let's hope GarageBand comes through for me. And yes, I think I had some requests after even part of the last episode or this part of this episode about doing a Ask Me Anything sort of situation. So I'm gonna explore doing that and see if people are interested in asking questions, because I love answering questions and I love sharing more about my experience and what I understand. And honestly, it's vastly expanding every single week. Which is exciting and also a lot, but it's very beautiful. So if you made it through this, thank you so much for listening. I hope maybe this has piqued your interest or something. There's lots of resources out there, good ones. The ones I shared are really powerful as well. So yes, thank you.